This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
That's the music we wanted to hear. Ron Culver, the man behind the glass, playing Reunited. And you know why? There's so much reunion here tonight. This is the first show we've done this year, Carla. We are reunited tonight.
In 2018 with Peaches and Herb and Ron.
First show in 2018. And we're reunited with Ron Culver. He was our first national show producer. We had him in the summer. He made us what we are.
Ron, you are to blame. I am sorry to tell you, but thank you.
And then he drifted away. He went on to other shows. Some thought he was a little bigger than our show. But he's back tonight. We are all reunited, just the three of us.
How do you feel, Ron?
Oh, I'm excited. I can't wait to get started.
He can't wait. He's been looking forward to this for months.
Get this party started.
We were launched in July, and Carla Dawson was unveiled to the whole country. The show went on, and we've become a weekly show. We're here every Monday night. Thanks for joining The Boss and the Gloss. Believe it or not, I am the boss, and she is the gloss.
There we go. Happy 2018. It's our first show this year. I'm glad to be back.
Well, Ron was asking me before the show, he said, I loved Carla in 2017. Is there any way that she could even be better in 2018?
Yeah, I don't think it's possible.
Not possible.
But we'll see.
I don't think so.
He's going to get me in the Raiders segment. That's all I can say.
In the Raiders segment to come,
no,
there's big news.
I actually have to be somewhere else during that segment.
Yes,
so
see?
I'll bring someone else in. I'm going to the pen. I'm going to bring in the lefty to take care of you during the Raider segment.
All right. I'll let you slide tonight, Ron. That's about it.
Well, so much has happened since we were last on the air. There's now a national champion in college football.
And who's surprised?
Oh, no. And we said Alabama was going to win. The minute they got into the playoff series, you just knew somehow Saban, given that second shot at life, was going to come away with a title.
Unbelievable. But I don't know a college coach who would be gutsy enough to pull his starter at the half and bring in a virtually unseen at that juncture. And you know what? He should be rewarded for that courage. That took some guts.
Well, it was courage. I think he was in part concluding that he wasn't going to win the other way. So when you've got almost a sure outcome in one direction, you got to roll the dice in the other direction.
But if he loses, woo,
he would have been second guessed. But of course, he's Nick Saban. He can do these
he's
things.
He's Nick Saban, and he knew what he had in Tua, and boy, that was just revealed to the country. Welcome to CFB.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, I know where you were this weekend. You sat and watched all four games. They were actually pretty darn captivating, except for the first one. Let's get this one out of the way. The Titans and Patriots.
Dramaless.
Almost just predictable.
It was so predictable. I think the only thing that wasn't predictable, last week, Mike Mularkey was looking like he was going to get a contract extension.
No, right.
Wow, what a difference a week makes.
Sure.
But no, I think there was, Brady was vintage Brady, and that's about it. He no sacks. And only five hits on the quarterback.
Right.
That's not going to happen.
Right.
And Tennessee saw that. So.
And the Patriots defense showed up. They've got some pass rush now. Do you remember way, way, way back? It's almost impossible to remember. Week one, they were beaten by the Chiefs. And the big issue was the Patriots have no pass rush. And now they're putting pressure on the quarterback.
Give them 16 weeks. Look what happens. They'll find it.
Belichick found another way. But let's move on from that one. And let's look at Atlanta-Philadelphia. That was a game I thought Atlanta could win. They were on the road. It's tough to beat Philly in Philadelphia. But the Falcons couldn't score late in the game.
No, and you know, Matt Ryan, he's experienced enough to know that when he scores 20 points or more, they win. 10 points. That's all you can put up in four quarters is 10 points? That was a tough look. And you see, Matt Ryan's been to the playoffs 9 times. Versus Nick Foles. Like, who would predict this one time? And it would just youth won out with Foles. It's unbelievable.
You talk about youth and the quarterback position. Interestingly to me, as
youth
I entered
experience.
The week. Well, look, I was coming into the week thinking we were going to have a Final Four that included four great quarterbacks: Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, Drew Brees, and former MVP of the league, Matt Ryan. So really three Hall of Famers and then Matt Ryan. I thought those would be the final four quarterbacks. And now we have sort of the giant and all the little boys.
Oh, my gosh. We've got Tom. I mean, listen to the names that we've got after Brady. You've got Foles, you've got Bortles, and you've got Keenum. I couldn't have put money on that one and gotten any of them right except for Brady.
And two of them were Rams quarterbacks last year.
Together, yeah, in 2015.
Yeah, do you think Jeff Fisher's getting an invite?
Yeah, Jeff Fisher, somehow he deserves to be in the mix. He needs to be there, does he not?
Yeah, I mean, these are his two guys.
These are his babies.
I mean, he shipped them off, but I mean, these are his two guys.
He gets no credit for that success.
No, but do you think Foles can win it? Can he take them? Is he capable of winning a Super Bowl?
I would not bet on Foles. I just can't see that.
Well, I thought it was interesting to watch him this weekend. So he had zero touchdown passes, but zero interceptions. And what the offensive coordinator did, which was brilliant for Philadelphia, they used Jay Ajayi and Ertz to, you know, extend yards after catch. That's how you do it with Foles, because mm-hmm. I don't think he can be the man to win it for you. But we want to make sure he doesn't get in the way. I think if he stays out of the way, they can do it. They've got enough weapons.
Well, I can tell you that coming into the game against the Falcons, I did not think Foles could do it. I have to give a shout out to Sean Salisbury, the host of the preceding show. He said on Saturday before the game, he said, Foles is going to look better. He's not going to lose the game. He's going to look better than we all think, and the Eagles will come out on top.
I think you just said it exactly right. He's not going to win it, but he's not going to lose it. He let the other pieces. So who do you blame if you're Atlanta? Do you blame Matt Ryan? Do you blame first-year offensive coordinator Steve Sarkisian?
Yeah, I think the offensive coordinator looks pretty weak in this outcome. When they had their shots, the play calling looked predictable. I don't feel like the total productivity of that offense this year is what it was last year.
No, they averaged 33 total point, you know, average points last year. Now it's 22,
yep.
11-point drop. And honestly, just watching them, just you look at the game this past weekend, four tries in the red zone from the 10-yard line, and they can't make it work with Julio Jones. They've lost their red zone swagger. They're 27 out of 54 this season. That, to me, that's an OC situation. That's Steve Sarkisian. And, you know, the last time we saw him before he went to Atlanta, he was the OC for the losing Alabama Crimson Tide,
yep,
versus Clemson, because remember Lane Kiffin had
left. He replaced Lane Kiffin.
He replaced Lane. So I don't know. I mean, I don't really want to blame Matt Ryan. I don't think he has gone down in efficiency that much. I really think it's Sarkisian. Ryan's got the same weapons as he had last year,
mm-hmm,
and they went all the way to the Super Bowl. So,
All right, let's look
curious
at the miracle in Minnesota, New Orleans versus Minnesota. A game for the ages. I was watching it. It looked to me like from a Minnesota perspective, the inverse of the Hail Mary, right? Remember the great Hail Mary, Roger Staubach to Drew Pearson. Cowboys win over Minnesota at Minnesota in the final minute. This was actually the final play, which is so outstanding, but amazing comeback on the part of the Vikings.
It was a wild walk-off. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Credit Stephon Diggs, not only for making that catch, which was beautiful, but he stayed in bounds, and he stayed on his feet.
Yep, and he stayed on his feet, and he had the sort of mental wherewithal to look up and see that he could actually run it in, because I'm sure he was told, once you catch it, be sure to get out of bounds. There was almost in his head, I'm sure, a trajectory, I'm going to get out of bounds, and yet as he tripped and he looked upfield, he saw he could make a run for it. Actually, when I was watching it, because of the camera angle, I didn't know if there was another defender there. And he started running down the field. I thought, oh, my goodness, he's going to run out the clock. And then he's going to be tackled by another safety coming the other way who has an angle on him. I thought he was just going to run out the clock and get pushed out of bounds.
Well, shame on the New Orleans defense, because there was no one back behind there. Because and poor rookie Marcus Williams, who has had a brilliant season. But I've never actually seen a tackle whiffed like that before on Diggs. You know, his right shoulder missed Stephon Diggs completely. I mean, it came up for air.
Well, all he had to do was go and hug him and hold him. It was that simple, yet that hard to do in the moment.
You know, I wonder if in Marcus Williams' mind, he's thinking, I don't want to pass interference because that gives them a new set of downs. And you saw in the Patriots-Tennessee game the day before that, you know, the Patriots got three first downs, you know, in the same possession on penalties.
Yep.
And so you really don't want a game to end that way. But gosh, it is so tough for him because for Marcus Williams, the only thing he shouldn't have done was whiff the tackle.
Yep.
Darn. But, you know, he manned up. He faced the media. He talked about it. He dealt with it. That's tough. That's really hard.
My heart went out to Drew Brees, who really was competitive down the stretch, led that great comeback, and was so good in the fourth quarter, and then had to sit on the sideline and watch that one go away.
Yeah, that was a tough one. But, you know, Drew Brees, two early interceptions, you're down with your offense has scored nothing in the first half. You're 17-0 at the half.
Yep.
That, you know, even though Drew Brees is who he is, and he's, you know, he's done a lot of great things, and so have the New Orleans Saints, it is just a really tough, at this level, really tough to overcome that.
Indeed it was. Well, then you've got Jacksonville and the Steelers, and another really great matchup, a great game. To me, the Steelers came out flat in the first half. I felt like maybe they were looking ahead. They didn't come to play.
No, they definitely didn't come to play. And it's at their home field. Like, come on. You know, you've got to be up for this. This is a playoff game. And this is kind of what I'm saying with New Orleans, too. At this level, you have to take everyone seriously. It's not easy to come back from 17 down there. Here, Pittsburgh was so busy looking ahead to the Patriots that they just really didn't. They didn't fear the Jaguars. And they should have.
Well, Tomlin set the precedent earlier in the season. Mm-hmm. Remember, when they had a game out, they still had a game to play, and they were going to face the Patriots. And he admitted on air that he was looking ahead to the Patriots. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, they won that bridge game, and then they went on to play the Patriots. This week, it looked like the Steelers were looking ahead. You saw LaDainian Bell's tweet. He said he loved round twos. He was excited for back-to-back round twos, excited to play the Patriots. That surely looks like he's looking ahead. It's something that I think a Belichick coach team would never do. They might think ahead, but they would never admit it.
No, they would never admit it.
Because somehow saying it out loud gives it an extra power.
It gives the other team bulletin board material that they don't already need. Who needs that? I mean, Jacksonville already, they're the only wild card team that made it to this round. Or that's still coming out of this round. And honestly, it is hard to take Jacksonville seriously with this shaky quarterback situation in Bortles. But they are a playoff team because of their defense. And you look at Bortles, who, you know, he's tricky. He's a four-year mistake-prone quarterback. But I look at last week's playoff game against the Bills, where he really beat the Bills with his legs when he couldn't muster more than 88 yards passing. And this week, Pittsburgh takes that away, and what does he do? He beats him with his arm. I mean, it was a crazy offensive game. So you got to credit, as much as I don't really want to, you got to credit Bortles and you got to credit the offensive coordinator for the Jaguars.
Yeah, I think the Jaguars outcoached the Steelers in that one, to be sure. Mm-hmm. When we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Brad Meester. He played center for the Jaguars for 14 years, and we'll get his perspective on the Jaguars' big win. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back to the O'Reilly Studios on a special MLK edition of The Boss and the Gloss. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They're close, convenient, and known for their guaranteed everyday low price. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every day. Welcome back to The Boss and the Gloss. Joining us now is Brad Meester. He is the former center of the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Jaguars who are heading to the AFC Championship game. Brad, I want to start with asking you about your expectations for the Jaguars at the start of the season. You know, Vegas had them at 100-1 odds that they would make the Super Bowl, and yet here they are, one game away. When did you realize there was something special?
I knew actually we were going to have a good team. I really did. I mean, we had, you know, it had been a work in progress for years now, you know, just putting these pieces together. putting the parts we needed for our offense, and especially this offseason, everything that we did with this defense, you could see it was definitely, it had the potential to be a great team. It really did. And then just watching them, and just, I think as the season went on, they just continued to get better and better. Now, obviously, we had our moments where we struggled there, you know, a couple games late in the year, but it's a team that I always felt I was going to do very well because they work well together. You know what I mean? And, you know, when one team, one side of the ball struggles a little bit, the other team has been able to pick it up. And that really has shown in the playoffs here in these first two rounds how they have worked together well and been able to get a couple wins.
No, you're so right about those offseason pickups, Brad, with A.J. Boye, with Calais Campbell, with Barry Church. I mean, they had, I think, the best offseason in all of the NFL by far. And it's showing up great.
And what definitely. I mean, they definitely addressed that defense. It was, they've done an awesome job.
Yeah, it's incredible. And clearly it seems like defense is what's winning them for them. But can you talk about, you mentioned the last 2 weeks in the postseason, the tale of the two Blakes. We saw Blake Bortles, who had more rushing yards than passing yards in a 10-3 win over Buffalo, and then lighting up the Steelers for 45 points yesterday. What do you make of this?
Well, some of it, I think, is just getting comfortable. You know what I mean? And obviously, you know, your first playoff game, you know, I had been there. You know what I mean? I remember my first playoff game. There's a little bit of, you know, that nervousness, that anxiety, you know, just that, you know, it's just a little bit different. The game is faster. It's weird. You know, it's the same game, but the game always seems to continue to pick up speed. Whether it's a preseason or regular season, it's faster. When you get to the playoffs, it just seems, you know, it's heightened. And so I think some of that had something to do with it. You know, I mean, it was just a little bit of nerves in that first game. But you could really see in Pittsburgh, you know, his confidence. Made some great throws and just the decision-making. Did an awesome job. And, you know, that's one of the great things about this team is just picking each other up. Because you look at the first game against Buffalo, obviously Blake struggled. I mean, we all know that. But the defense, you know, did an unbelievable job, you know, holding Buffalo to 3 points. They stepped up. When you go to Pittsburgh, obviously our defense, you know, gave up some points. You know, we gave up, you know, 40-some points, but our offense stepped up. You know, they took a spot. They knew what they had to do, and they took charge. And Blake did a tremendous job and stood in there with poise and made some great decisions.
Yeah, it was neat to see Bortles in the Buffalo game win the game with his legs. And then Pittsburgh decides to take away with his legs, and he wins it with his arms. So he is up for a fifth-year option for $19 million next year. If you are Tom Coughlin, do you lock him up?
That's a great question. You do. I mean, you've got to bring Blake back. He's really, you know, it's one of those positions that you got to have to be great at doing it. At playing quarterback and really in any position out there, you got to have confidence in what you're doing and know the system really well. And sometimes it takes a while. It just takes a little bit to learn the system. And as you gain more confidence in it and get more comfortable with it, you start to play better and better. And you can really see that this year in Blake, that he's had a lot of games where he just was lights out. And I think even for myself, you know, as I got later in my career, started playing better because I knew the system so well. You know, it became almost second nature. You don't even have to think anymore. You can just react and just can play, and, you know, you're able to play so much better, and I think you're starting to see that now. You know, he's been in that system for a while. He's getting comfortable with it, and you can continue to see him progress, and I think there's great things for him because he has that size. You know, I mean, if he's struggling or something's happening, he can take off and run. You know, I mean, he's got that night. He can run for his size, does a great job. And then, you know, to be able to throw it at the same time, that's a hard, hard thing for defenses to stop. You know, a guy that can take off when he wants to or is able to just throw it whenever he needs to. It's a great thing to have.
We're talking to Brad Meester. He played center for the Jaguars, and we are talking Jaguars. One of my observations about the game yesterday was the job of Doug Marrone, the coaching. I really felt like they out-coached Mike Tomlin and the Steelers. Sure, there were the big fourth-and-one calls. There was the onside kick call. Leave those aside. Just the game plan, the scheming, the play action to Bohonen and Tom Bohannon over the middle. There were just a lot of plays that were really impressive to me. Talk about the coaching.
They did a tremendous job. You're right. I mean, You talked about that fourth and one. Hey, I was at the game. We traveled out there to the game, and I couldn't believe it. I thought for sure, we would try to get some points on the board early. We'd kick the field goal. We went for it. What a tremendous decision. What a gutsy, great decision. And I think it put some real momentum on our side. And I don't think, the Steelers were quite ready for that. You know what I mean? I think even for myself sitting in the stands, I think the fans, in a lot of ways, thought they were going to walk in there and just take that game. You know what I mean? They were very quiet. You sat there and thought there was a game. They were just going to walk in and be able to handle it. And all of a sudden, we were ready to go. It was a big game for us, and we knew we had to come out firing. And what a great job by the staff by getting them ready for that game. Both physically, mentally, emotionally, they were under control the whole game and did a great job of jumping out early and getting on them. And awesome job. I mean, great decisions. That fourth and one was awesome. There's so many great things that they did, and there was, because of that, we were able to come out with a win in a tough environment. It's a tough place to play, and to be able to go out there and win is amazing.
Talking to Brad Meester, former center for the Jaguars. So the two cornerbacks, Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Bouye, outstanding the top of the game. In fact, it was sort of notable. Whenever the big play happened, when it was Antonio Brown catching the ball, there was almost no separation between the receiver and the coverage. Are these the two best corners in the league in your mind?
Definitely. I truly believe they are. They're the best combination out there. You get a lot of teams that have a great corner, but to have two of them like this on the same team, it's truly an asset. But what adds to them, not only is that, you can have great corners, but unless you have somebody that can create pressure up front, it's hard for a corner or anybody like that to stay locked on somebody for an extensive period of time. Now, you got to give credit to that defensive line and that linebacker core just constantly creating pressure, putting quarterbacks in tough situations, to try to make a pass under stress. And when you got corners like that on them, it's a tough combination. It's a tough defense to play against, and it is the best defense in the league.
Yeah, duly noted, Brad. I agree. I'm going to ask you to switch hats just a little bit. It's still Jacksonville, but you played for several years under head coach Jack Del Rio in Jacksonville. As you know, he was just fired as a coach of the Oakland Raiders. I wanted to know, in your position, what was it like? Did you like playing for him? What was he like as a head coach? And do you think he really got a fair shot in Oakland? Did he lose his job, or was it that Gruden was available and won the job?
I love playing for Jack. He did an awesome job. I played 14 years, but a lot of that was with Coach Del Rio. I started with Coughlin for a little bit, for 3 years, and then he was with Jack for
8 years,
8 or 9 years. So I played for him for quite a bit. He did an unbelievable job. Great coach, always had us well prepared for every game, and I thought he did an excellent job in Oakland. They made the playoffs last year, had a great team this year. Obviously, they just missed it this year. I hate to see him get released, but that's one of the crazy things about this business. That's just the way it is sometimes. It's a cutthroat business, and things like that happen. And obviously, he knows that. That's just the way it is sometimes. And obviously I think that opportunity for Gruden was there, and they wanted to be able to bring him in and bring him back to Oakland and stuff like that. But, I know that, Jack will land back on his feet. I don't think he'll be out there that long, either in a defensive coordinator spot or as a head coach very, very quickly, if not this year, in the next couple years to come. Because he did a great job. When he came to Jacksonville, we were a team that was struggling. And he came in and got us to the playoffs. And, every year we were right there on the cusp of making the playoffs if we weren't in. And he did that in Oakland. So he's a guy that will get picked up again and, be coaching, head coaching again, pretty soon.
That's Brad Meester, a 14-year veteran, former center for the Jaguars. Brad, thank you so much for joining us on a big day for Jacksonville.
Congratulations,
all right, well, thank you so much.
Brad.
All right, thank you. Thanks for having me.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
I think that must be Ron Culver's voice. It's a new voice, and he sounds pretty good. It must be you, Ron.
I wish I could get that deep.
Yeah, that's pretty deep vocals.
That's new year, new voice. There we go.
Maybe you could do that, Carla.
You know what? Sadly, with this voice, it can get deep. You don't even want to hear it.
You know, everybody loves that raspy tone.
Everybody does?
Everybody.
Oh, be darned.
I don't know if we want a deep voice. We just want deep thoughts.
Deep thoughts. She's got them tonight.
Yes.
In fact, she's got some deep thoughts about the Raiders, who have made a huge coaching change. Jack Del Rio, one of your former man crushes, maybe he's still
he's still a current man crush. He's just an unemployed man crush.
Okay, so you stick by your man when he falls from the top.
Yes, he fell from grace. Unnecessarily so, I think.
Unnecessarily, but they got the great John Gruden.
They did, who is also another one of my crushes. So I'm not disappointed with Gruden. I just don't love the Raidery way in which John came. So my question for you, boss, because you are the boss.
Yes.
Did Jack Del Rio, did he deserve to lose his job? And did he actually lose it, like play himself out of it? Or was it just that Gruden was available and won it? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, I didn't think Del Rio deserved to lose the job. Either. Obviously, it was a disappointing season, but those things happen. I mean, look at the Cowboys. They've had ups and downs and up and then sort of a down year, disappointing year, finishing 9-7. There's a lot of reason to bet on Jack Del Rio and give him another chance. But you intersect that with the fact that John Gruden was available.
I think he was an
apple of the eye for Mark Davis, and he just couldn't let Gruden sit idle. When he saw the chance to get Gruden, he obviously moved very aggressively.
And Mark Davis has been courting John Gruden for really about the past 6 years. Let's not think about the Rooney Rule, but nonetheless, you know, he's been visiting him in Tampa Bay when he was there, visiting him on, you know, in the booth, all of that. And he sees the work ethic. I mean, John Gruden is a maniac as a work ethic. I mean, the days before broadcast, he's up at 3 a.m. studying game film, studying, you know, schemes, everything, you know, preparing just for the broadcast. And I know that Mark Davis loves that, of course, as an owner. That's what you want. More importantly, though, I think Mark Davis is making up for his dad basically trading John Gruden 16 years ago to Tampa Bay. And I think this is a makeup call. I mean, yes, they want him back. He's a brilliant coach and a brilliant offensive mind. And David Carr needs him. He needs to get back on track.
And is there any doubt in your mind or any question in your mind that Gruden's been away from the game too long, that he would have lost touch with the new offenses, the new schemes that are in football today?
Not with him at all. Because even though he wasn't a coach not sooner than 16 years ago, he's been in the booth for 9 years. And he does that Gruden QB camp, which I love watching when he gets all the young guys that are coming out going into the draft. What's been so great about him, because he's such a student of the game and he's got such sharp football intellect and a fiery passion that is never, I mean, Chucky has never lost that. That passion still goes.
Now you call him Chucky. He does contort his face just a little bit, doesn't he when
he
talks?
A little bit of that. Yes, he does, because he's so into it.
Okay.
I love that passion. But I think what he has had the luxury of doing, which not all broadcasters do it, but many of them do, but he has been able to study in depth the coaching, the players, the schemes, the everything for all 32 teams. Because he broadcasts for all of them, and he's does so much homework, so much studying, so much due diligence. I think the Raiders just got exactly what they needed.
Well, interesting, Rich Gannon, who was in consideration to join the staff.
Thank you.
Gannon said, I don't want to join that staff. I can't keep up with Gruden. Too many hours.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think Gruden's at a good spot. His kids are older. You know, Gruden's mom, Mark Davis, he is no dummy. So he goes to Kathy Gruden, John's mom. And she's his ally, and he says, I need you to help me here. So she calls John and says, hey, you love coaching.
Yep.
You need to get back into that role. That was part of it. And Dick Vermeil, and you know, the retired longtime NFL coach, really encouraged Gruden the same. And he said, listen, this guy has kept up such a passion and has stayed so close to the game. Don't wait as long as I did, which was 15 years for Vermeil. But he did come back and win a Super Bowl and encouraged John Gruden to do it. So, and then there's that, you know, that money factor, that little teeny thing of $100 million over 10 years. Well, that might get me to move the needle, too.
No doubt. I mean, but look, he's obviously living a good lifestyle regardless, and his quality of life or the stress of the work will certainly go up from being a broadcaster. Right, now, he does enter a Raider team where Derek Carr is there, the foundational piece, the quarterback, Khalil Mack, on the other side of the ball. Mm-hmm. There are some pieces there. He didn't walk into an empty cupboard.
No, he didn't. And he walked into a place that has great pieces. And I think the first thing he really needs to address is the offensive coordinator. And that is what I believe. If there's anything that cost Jack Del Rio's job, it was not hiring Todd Downing, because he was the hot name when John Gruden hired him. But the first year OC, Carr regressed. Amari Cooper can't hang on to anything. They had the same exact pieces on offense with the addition of Marshawn Lynch. I don't think they used him well. I think Del Rio's downfall was keeping Todd Downing, and that's what may have cost him the job.
Well, Gruden may be looking for an OC, but he does plan to call his own plays.
Yes, and he will. He will. But you know what's so neat, too, is John Gruden, he's so motivating. I mean, I love listening to him. I've talked about this on the show as listening on his Monday night telecast and whatever. But Jerry Rice listened to his press conference when he was introduced as the Raiders coach, and he said, "I'm ready to suit up. This guy makes anyone want to play." And that's key.
Bring back Jerry Rice. I love that.
Gosh, we love that.
Well, knowing how Rice trains, he probably could step out and make a contribution.
Hey, they're going to Vegas. Take a gamble. Bring in Jerry.
Well, so there are two other openings that are sort of interesting. The Lions appear to have their sights set on hiring Matt Patricia.
Mm-hmm. Defensive coordinator for the Patriots.
And then it would look like the Colts are going to pick up Josh McDaniels. So the former Patriot connection rings again. And I mean, both those teams have players. I mean, with McDaniels, he's coming into the Colts. They need Andrew Luck to be healthy.
Mm-hmm. That will be the difference maker, honestly, for Indianapolis. But, you know, the Lions gig is interesting because Matt Patricia is the defensive coordinator for the Patriots. Obviously, the Lions are not worried about their offense. They have the highest paid quarterback in the league with Matt Stafford. They love Matt Stafford. So I think they think, no worries on the offense. We can keep that going. But I think they bring in Matt Patricia because they know that defense is really who needs to step it up. So I think he actually could be primed to do pretty well if the offense runs as it is and they just can step up the defense. Josh McDaniels, I think there's more question marks there.
Maybe so, but I've seen a lot of mock drafts that have Saquon Barkley going to the Colts. He'd be a heck of an addition in that backfield behind Luck.
Yeah, as long as you know how to use him. You know, like the Carolina Panthers have learned throughout the year how to best use Christian McCaffrey, and I still don't think they used him to full efficiency. When you have a weapon like a Saquon Barkley and a McCaffrey, you've got to be creative, and I think Josh McDaniels, I don't know how much creativity he's done with that in New England because you don't need that much, but it'll be a challenge. It'll be a good challenge.
All right, a report came out today said that the Giants may be narrowing their list and focusing on Pat Shurmur, the offensive coordinator of the Vikings. He's certainly a hot name right now after last week's win.
Well, and look what he did with Case Keenum. I mean, Case Keenum has been a journeyman. He's not new in the league. I mean, he couldn't keep a starting job at the LA Rams under Jeff Fisher. So, and look what Shurmur has done with him here in Minnesota. It makes him look absolutely like a genius, an MVP candidate, and hopefully, you know, could sign him under a long-term contract for what he's doing this year. So I think Shurmur is the man in New York because they're going to have to bring in another quarterback, even if they keep Manning. He's older. He's in his late 30s. He's on the upper end. So they're either going to bring in a rookie or get a new veteran. And Pat Shurmur is the guy that's able to develop a quarterback.
Giants have the number 2 pick overall, are almost certain to take Darnold or Rosen. Mm-hmm. Shermer's got a great pedigree with quarterbacks. You know, he was a longtime assistant with the Eagles under Andy Reid. And what he's done with Case Keenum is almost miraculous. Now, his stint as the head coach of the Browns was not so good.
I think you can't count that.
You can't count anything.
The Browns don't give him a quarterback to work with.
Right. You can't blame anybody for having a losing record at the Browns.
No.
Not even Hugh Jackson?
I can't even blame Hugh for that.
Okay, well, he's another guy I might have thought would lose
his
job.
At 1-31 over the last 2 years. Shocking. Really? Do you think he should be in his job?
No. Look, Mike Mularkey just got fired after a playoff win. And there is Hugh Jackson, who hasn't won in years. And there he is as the returning coach of the Cleveland Browns.
That is a head scratcher. I mean, in one side, I think we can't blame him because who have they given him? The management has been so poor in Cleveland and the decision-making so bad. Yet on the other hand, he's won one game in 2 years.
Well, they're going to bring in a quarterback this year. Do you want to put that quarterback in the hands of Hugh Jackson? I mean, I'd rather put him in the hands of Pat Shurmur if he were available.
Sure, but he won't be.
He won't be.
Yeah.
So the Titans today made the decision to fire Mike Mularkey, and there really aren't any there just aren't that many coaches left to think about who could come in.
Well, we did talk about my boyfriend, Jack Del Rio.
Jack Del Rio. Yeah, well, he's a name. He's out there. He may be the last man standing for the Titans to pick up.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I don't, and I know Mike Vrabel's in the coaching circles too, the defensive coordinator for the Houston Texans.
Yeah,
I don't know if he'd want to go to another AFC South team.
Right, but he's rumored for, I guess, the Colts. But I don't know that he's ready. He's obviously done well with the Texans on defense. I would think he would need a little more seasoning.
I think he needs a little more seasoning too, and I think other general managers need to see how he does when he has a healthy defensive line. This year was just piecemeal. So we'll see. But he's a great name and everybody really likes him. And he too is from the Patriots tree. I'll be darned.
But this Patriots tree has not done so well in the NFL. When you look at the guys who have come out of the Patriots tree, those coaches who coached under Belichick, Josh McDaniels, Romeo Crennel, Eric Mangini, they have a 72 wins and 119 record in their 10 years as head coaches. They just don't do that well. All of them have been losers in the head coaching role at their respective teams.
I think this speaks, again, we talk about this a lot, but it really speaks to the system that's in New England, you know, that Belichick really has been able to cultivate. Because Bill O'Brien's another one. I mean, you know, you get them outside of that system. And there's just not the success. And maybe it's because it is a collective situation, but I don't know. We were talking before the show, and you said, wouldn't they learn from this many years under Bill Belichick how to do this?
These guys are sitting at the feet of the master, and the master walks in each week, and I guess he's the one identifying where the matchups are best for the Patriots, and he's the one saying, this is the way we need to attack the opposition. This is the game plan we need to turn out. If that's so, you would think a Josh McDaniel would learn from that and be able to take the same lessons and go out and apply it in his own scheming as a head coach at another team.
But if Belichick talks as much to his team as he does in press conferences, they're not getting any wisdom. They're just going to have to watch and see. He's kind of the two-word man in press conferences.
Well, I got to believe he's more outspoken.
I think he might give a little more away. But, you know, right. I wonder with talent evaluation, can you teach that? Is that just something that you innately have, you know, the ability to evaluate talent, which clearly Bill Belichick is the master at that. And I don't know if that's something that you can teach.
Well, hard to know. You know, I heard one theory that the reason all these coaches do so well for the Patriots is they have Tom Brady. Tom Brady's making the coaching staff. Then they all go elsewise and they don't have Brady.
No, they don't.
But Belichick has to be the guy who has made the team so successful. It surely looks that way. And he is, as you noted, a great identifier of talent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've identified you as a big talent. And when we come back, we will wrap up the coaching carousel. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Well, we've made the rounds on most of the coaching developments, but there's one right here in Houston, Texas. Bill O'Brien got a contract that now he's going to be here for 5 years. And that was a surprise because there were certainly whispers not much more than a month ago that maybe Bill O'Brien was out, Rick Smith, the GM, was going to stay, and now Rick Smith is gone. He had to leave with his wife is not well. She has breast cancer, and the Texans have kept O'Brien and brought in a general manager, Brian Gaines, who
was previously with the Texans.
Previously with the Texans and who seems to be O'Brien's choice, somebody that O'Brien's very comfortable working with.
So they're obviously giving a lot of the decision-making to O'Brien, which is interesting after a 4-12 season, which I can't totally blame on him, you know, because the injury situation, their IR list could field a Pro Bowl team at that point this year. It was crazy. But it is fascinating. I don't know.
It's not what we would have scripted or thought or envisioned just 6 to 8 weeks ago.
Because he had 1 year left. And I understand it is hard to play on a lame duck year, sure. But wow, 5-year extension.
Yeah, I find that interesting, what you just said. That is the conventional wisdom. It's hard to play in the last year. But, of course, most of America works that way.
Well, this is what – exactly.
It is sort of – I mean, you're getting paid to do the job. You show up, you do the job, and at the end
and
of the year, depending
on
where things are, then you might get renewed or you might go somewhere else. But in the NFL and with coaches generally, if you're entering the last year, suddenly there's all kinds of speculation that must mean something, that they're going to depart at the end of the year.
The shield is fascinating, isn't it?
Well.
You're exactly right. Like, teachers have to re-up every year. That they hope they get a contract that they can keep going. Mm-hmm. And can you imagine if they felt that lame duck?
Whew. One thing that does come out of this situation is there'll be a lot of accountability now with O'Brien getting his man as the general manager. There was previously this view, well, maybe Rick Smith was at odds with O'Brien. Maybe if there was a bad pick, it was Rick Smith's fault,
yeah,
not Bill O'Brien.
In paradise.
But now it's all one entity, and it's Bill O'Brien's house.
And Deshaun Watson is supposedly coming back, so pressure is on O'Brien.
You've been listening to The Boss and the Gloss, David and Carla on SB Nation Radio.